Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 23rd of June 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in studio, Mike Robinson. And we're delighted to be joined today by David Scott with Northern Exposure. And of course, David reporting north of the border, but today he'll be focusing on the tragic Grenfell Tower fire. Well, we better start off with the State of Parliament, and we say it's a blue hat Parliament. What do we mean by that? Well, of course, the Sovereign did not wear her crown. Thus, this was an unconstitutional start to the Parliament. We say Parliament is simply a criminal cabal.
Well, if you're saying and we're saying that it's an unconstitutional Parliament, somebody else is saying that the Article 50 exercise was unconstitutional, and perhaps it wasn't even triggered in the first place.
Well, this is quite amazing. We've only just briefly seen this article. We'll be having a look at it in more detail, but I'll just read you a little bit. It says, Theresa May, better known as Treason May, Theresa May's triggering of Article 50 was an illusion with no legal basis, a leading barrister has claimed. David Walchover said the letter giving notice of the UK's intention to leave the 27-nation bloc had no legal effect and was a non-event. And he said that in an article for the Council magazine. He added that the UK never triggered Article 50 because it never made the constitutional decision to leave the EU. The letter delivered to European Council President Donald Tusk in March is a foil trigger, a chimera, an illusion, not the real thing. So we've got a leading barrister saying the whole thing effectively was a joke. And later on in that article, he asked the question, was this by accident or design, which is a key question.
Absolutely key question. Well, Theresa May at the European Council yesterday and today, and we mentioned this yesterday, that this was taking place. This is the EU heads of state or government meeting. And they're going to be discussing all kinds of things, counter-terrorism, combating radicalisation, strengthening EU cooperation and on external security and defence. Well, here was Theresa arriving, looking very fetching in her plunging neckline dress there, Brian.
And her big pearls, of course.
And her big pearls. And so she was giving a presentation at the end of the sort of main council event on some proposals that she has. We'll come on to that in a second. And then there was a working dinner focusing on foreign policy issues, which they described as in light of recent summits and meetings, including with the US and Turkish leaders. And they're reaffirming the Council is reaffirming its commitment to the Paris Agreement on climate. We'll come on to that now.
More flags than the Reichstag there, Mike.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Theresa May, at the end of this little walk up the red carpet, went and spoke to some journalists. And so we'll show a short clip of this. And I think the thing to note here is people can judge whether she actually answered the question that was asked.
Your version of Brexit, when the mandate that you desire to strengthen is actually weakened.
I'm very pleased to be here at the European Council today, following the constructive start of our negotiations for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. And that was a very constructive start to those negotiations, but it's also about how we will build a future special and deep partnership with our friends and allies in Europe.
So do you think she answered the question, Brian?
Not in the slightest. She just came out with a soundbite which steamrolled over the question, ignored the question.
A pre-planned, pre-prepared and statement. Rehearsed statement, yes. Yeah. Well, the statement went on.
And today I'm going to be setting out some of the UK's plans, particularly on how we propose to protect the rights of EU citizens and UK citizens as we leave the European Union. But there will also be other issues on the agenda, other important issues, such as counter-terrorism. And one of the things I will be calling on with other European leaders today is that we do more working together to ensure that we stop the spread of extremism online, that we prevent terrorists from having a safe space online, and we keep our citizens safe.
So, Brian, censorship, one of the key topics. We'll come on to that in a second. Now, that was yesterday. Today, then, she got asked another question. I want people to pay attention to the expression on her face as she is asked this question.
The, the EU says that the cut-off date for EU citizens arriving in the UK to get settled status must be March 2019, when we actually leave. Do you think you've got any realistic chance of getting anything better than that?
So, again, rabbit in headlights seems to be...
Just fear. She looks terrified in front of that reporter, terrified of the questions, and there's some form of nervous tick there.
You pay close attention to how she answered, and look out for the nervous tick.
Well, last night I was pleased to be able to set out what is a very fair and a very serious offer for EU citizens who are living in the United Kingdom, and the government will set out more detailed proposals on Monday. I want to reassure all those EU citizens who are in the UK, who've made their lives and homes in the UK, that no one will have to leave. We won't be seeing families split apart. This is a fair and serious offer. And I want to give those EU citizens in the UK certainty about the future of their lives, but I also want to see that certainty given to UK citizens who are living in the European Union. Of course, there will be details of this arrangement, which will be part of the negotiating process, but we've made what I believe is a very serious, a very fair offer. It's a very constructive start to the talks at the beginning of the week. We've set out the issues that we want to start talking about early in the negotiations. I've said right from the beginning that I want citizens' rights to be one of those early negotiations, and it will be. We've set out what I believe is a serious offer, a fair offer, that will give the reassurance to EU citizens living in the UK. They've made their homes, they've made their lives in the UK, and they will be able to stay and continue to do so.
So, Brian, strong and stable now seems to be serious and fair.
Yeah, she's been rumbled on that one. But we come back to that tick, Mike. I think this is cognitive dissonance. This lady knows that what she's saying is untrue. She knows that she's telling what is basically a lie in front of the camera. And that is some form of reaction to that. But she is so nervous, so scared. Why? Because this is a scam. This is theatre unravelling in front of the Reichstag, as it were, and she knows it.
Obviously censorship, this issue continuing to be discussed. We mentioned this issue, this thing that that Europol was holding a couple of months ago. Europol hosts conference on online terrorist propaganda. This is something that the European Council has decided to issue a statement on, following Theresa May's taking part in that meeting and really pushing for this. The European Council strongly condemns the recent terrorist attacks and stands united and firm in the fight against terrorism, hatred and violent extremism. These acts have strengthened our resolve to cooperate at EU level so as to enhance our internal security. So, Brian, I find this very interesting that Theresa May has gone to the European Council in order to present Britain's plans for leaving, and yet she is still taking an agenda item to that and trying to persuade people at the European Council to follow that agenda item. And they've released this statement. They say that industry has its own responsibility to help combat terrorism and crime online, building on the work of the EU Internet Forum. The European Council expects industry to establish an industry forum and develop new technology and tools to improve the automatic detection and removal of content that incites to terrorist acts. I find that slightly disturbing language, automatic detection and removal.
Well, everybody's to be monitored all of the time at every level, everywhere, Mike. This is the overall agenda that Theresa May brought in. As we have said many times, she has brought in the most sophisticated state spying apparatus in any European country. Britain, under a thin veneer of normality, is a police state. Perhaps we should just bring in...
Just before we bring in David, okay. I just want to bring this one up, because the European Union doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind on this issue. Theresa May and the European Council, that's the heads of state, seem to be arguing for curtailment of the rights of free speech, and also particularly for curtailment of encryption. And yet a couple of days ago, a number of media outlets pointing out that the EU itself is proposing a mandatory end. They were proposing mandatory end-to-end encryption for all citizens. So what they're saying is that anybody providing a service on the internet would need to provide compulsorily provide end-to-end encryption for all their services. So the EU doesn't seem to be able to make up its mind on this issue. David, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's an introduction of, once again, rules and rules. Within Scotland, we're seeing the Freedom of Information Act being routinely ignored by the government. And the way they are doing this is to have private meetings with no minutes taken. So more and more government business has been done in secret with no record. Chatham House rules now govern the country. And that's to keep their information secret from the people. The people, on the other hand, seem to be more and more monitored, and everything we do and say must be visible to the state. And this is the same state, remember, that David Cameron said, for too long we've been a passively tolerant society, saying to our people, as long as you obey the law, we will leave you alone. Well, I like a passively tolerant society, and I like a society that leaves people alone who obey the law. But that doesn't seem to be the agenda now.
No, absolutely not. Well, let's look at what else the European Council was talking about yesterday. They reiterated their commitment to strengthening EU cooperation on external security and defence, so as to protect, they say, the Union and its citizens and contribute to peace and stability in its neighbourhood and beyond. I'm not aware that the EU has been doing that terribly much in recent years, but anyway. As reflected in the Council conclusions of the 18th of May and the 19th of June 2017, significant progress has been achieved in implementing the EU global strategy in the area of security and defence and the joint declaration signed in Warsaw by the EU and NATO leaders. The transatlantic relationship and EU-NATO cooperation must remain key to our overall security, allowing us to respond to evolving security threats, including cyber, hybrid and terrorism. The European Council welcomes the establishment in Helsinki of a European Centre of Excellence for Countering Hybrid Threats. The High-Level Conference on Security and Defence held in Prague on the 9th of June 2017 underlined both complementarity between the EU and NATO and the need to step up European efforts to strengthen our defence-related research and capabilities and operations. And they went on to say that the joint development of capability projects commonly agreed by member states to fill the existing major shortfalls and development in the technologies of the future is crucial to fulfil the level of ambition of the EU approved by the European Council in December 2016. And Brian, this is exactly what we've been warning about, that the cuts to national military capabilities have been coordinated across the EU, so there's no overlap in member states, and member states can contribute a piece of the common capability pie.
They can contribute a piece, but the thing that's key is that they are, interdependent. They become locked together because one nation doesn't have sufficient equipment and capability to do the job on its own. And the picture you've had on screen, I'm pretty sure, has got Fallon in front of it. I think this is a P3 maritime patrol aircraft. And of course, Britain now doesn't have any maritime patrol aircraft. We're dependent on other European nations for that very, very important role. And that was a deliberate act by the government to get rid of those aircraft in the same way it got rid of the Harriers.
Right. And they went on to say that the European Council welcomes the Commission's communication on a European Defence Fund, composed of a research window and a capability window. And it's looking forward to swift operationalisation. I think they're making up English words here, which is why I'm struggling to read some of this.
Well, this is EU English, Mike, yes. Which is why you're having trouble at the moment.
So they go on to say it calls for rapid agreement on the proposal for a European Defence Industrial Development Programme with a view to its swift implementation before the British public... No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that. It says before more comprehensive programmes can be envisaged in the medium term. They are rushing ahead with this defence union as fast as they possibly can.
I'm going to say they are, Mike, and I think this is due to the good work of a great many people pumping out information showing that the whole Brexit thing is a lie whilst EU military unification continues apace. Theresa May knows it, Fallon knows it, the whole of the Conservative Party knows it, and she is so nervous, she's so scared, because of what she is doing in front of the camera is treason on the British nation. That's what's going on.
Did you say that Brexit is a lie?
My opinion.
Yes. Well, it can't be, because as you can see here, they've produced a memo saying that they are moving two European institutions away from the UK because of Brexit.
Oh.
So So anyway, simply this is a bit of reorganisation. They're moving a couple of minor departments that were based in London out of London.
And this fits with the fact that Britain is going to stay locked into the EU, but we're to be hollowed out as a nation state and left as a junkyard park somewhere on the northwestern side of Europe.
Okay.
David, it is getting increasingly obvious what's going on here. Something's got to break shortly.
Yes, I'm loving the language. I'm not surprised Mike is struggling with the words complementarity and operationalization. Yeah, this is not English. This is a language called International Art English. And International Art English looks down on Standard English because it has too few nouns.
Okay, we'll leave
it
there.
And of course, if you can control the language, then you control the way people think, and then you can control the way you behave. So this is not just a topic of humour. This is serious stuff, but we'll save that for another day, perhaps. What is Nigel Farage up to? It's time to bring him back on screen because he's getting very excited. This was the man that stood on the public stage and said that UK had achieved Brexit. That was it. There'd been a vote. We were coming out of the EU. And here we are months later, and it's quite clear that was complete nonsense. But here's some bigger nonsense from Mr. Farage. He was speaking, and he had this to say. All I will say is that if Heidi Alexander's view that we should stay in the single market continues and gains support from some in the Tory benches, we will have effectively ignored a referendum result. If that happens, there will be a huge space in British politics for UKIP in a couple of years' time. So we've got UKIP falling apart, but he says, because of discussions, there's a space in British politics for UKIP. This is just complete nonsense from this man. He successfully led UKIP into a cul-de-sac, and the party is now falling apart. We've got very distressed UKIP people contacting us to say that their local organisations are beginning to drift away. And of course, Nigel Farage has never, ever addressed the key issues of treason within Westminster. He's never talked about the economy. He's never talked about money supply, child abuse. It has been this continual lie that we were coming out of Europe. Well, there are other things in store for UKIP. And this lady is the latest person to come forward. And here's Pink News. And it says that the lesbian ally of EDL's Tommy Robinson is standing to be UKIP leader. And Ms. Waters has been a prominent activist in the anti-Islamic Pegida movement and has also praised far-right leaders Marine Le Pen and Geert Wilders. Goes on to say that she served as deputy leader of the UK arm of Pegida, the far-right anti-Islam group allegedly set up by Tommy Robinson, which founded the English Defence League. So this is all pretty mucky stuff, Mike. And last weekend, according to this article, she apparently spoke alongside Mr. Robinson at a rally in Manchester organised by the Gays Against Sharia movement. And that meeting was accused of exploiting the Orlando shooting to promote hate. So this is a pretty interesting lady. We did a little bit of digging. This is part of her own tweets where she's sort of rooting for Tommy Robinson. Remember that this man was caught up in all sorts of skullduggery, reports made, links to the London School of Economics and the BBC, but we never did get to the bottom of who this man really was and what the agenda was. We'll remind people of some of the research that UK Column did at the time. We were just fascinated to see this man swimming in a very interesting pond. BBC heavily involved, of course, with Aqil Ahmed, the BBC head of religion and ethics. There was some talk of a programme going on there, but what an interesting relationship, the far right with the BBC. We had Coleus, which was a very strange independent media company based up in London. We never could get to the bottom of them. And then, as you can see on the left, links into the London School of Economics and also the chair of Quilliam and the Global Islamist Party. So we're not sure who Tommy Robinson is. Well, remember, of course, that he's Stephen Yaxley Lennon. But now we've got links from him and EDL through into UKIP itself. And I think what's coming here is an attempted coup to take UKIP from being centre and obviously very, very important for capturing those 17 million Brexit votes. We're now going to try and overlay it with a right-wing element. David, just give you a brief comment on that before I take us through some more information on Ms. Waters and where I think this is going.
Yeah, a couple of things strike me very forcibly. Firstly, and again, this is partly a Scottish perspective, is the huge representation at the very top of British politics of the lesbian and gay community. Now, this is 1-2% of the population. Well, in Scotland, almost all of the political leaders, including the leader of UKIP, the Scottish Secretary, the leader of the Labour Party, leader of the Conservative Party, leader of the Green Party, are lesbian, gay, bisexual. So we're left, in terms of party leaders, with very much a minority, which is an odd situation. You know, what's driving that? Are we seeing people who are able to devote their entire lives to political activities rising to the top? Or is it something else? I'd like to know. And it does seem somewhat strange when you consider how much policy is made for families, that family men and women are not better represented at the highest levels making those policies. As far as the rise of the right is concerned, this is a very interesting area. The intolerance of the left, the refusal of the left to have real issues discussed, the no platforming of people, the use of political violence. Ultimately, if it's allowed to continue, it will have a backlash and there will be some very nasty elements rising from the right. We don't want that. It's bad for the country, it's bad for everyone in it. But if we keep the left-wing intolerance going, eventually, I think that's what we'll end up with.
OK, well, thank you for that. Well, let's have a look in a little bit more detail at Anne-Marie Waters. She's made a number of little video clips. I had a look through this particular one. UKIP against Sharia is the title of it. And she says that UKIP has announced policies to tackle the problems associated with Islam. I've taken some little excerpts out of this. A ban on the burqa and Sharia councils were the most significant. The task now is to convince the public. And to do this requires expertise. And she's sort of suggesting, of course, that she's got the expertise to put forward. She says a person must know this topic if they're to bypass a hostile media to reach the British people. They must be able to answer questions on religious freedom and why the burqa should be banned, but not all other symbols of religious adherence. So she's quite an expert, apparently, on Islam. She's an expert on all matters religious, presumably unless they criticise her. She goes on to say UKIP wants to ban Sharia councils. We must be prepared to tell some inconvenient truths about Islam. I think I've heard that phrase before somewhere. The fact is that Sharia councils flout the law around child custody and domestic violence, are entirely in tune with the teachings of Islam. Islam sanctions domestic violence and removes all rights from mothers and children. Islam imposes brutal punishments. So she's heavily focused on Islam. But what I noticed is that she doesn't really focus on where the cause for these problems is and how this situation has arisen, that we have these problems inside UK. So we're just bringing this gentleman. We've got Sir Peter Sutherland. And of course, this is the man who has been intimately linked with UN policy on migration and also the Bilderberg movement. And he's the man who said that the EU should be doing its best to encourage mass migration to undermine the homogeneity of European countries. So Anne-Marie Waters doesn't get to grips with this sort of individual, the man and his colleagues causing the problem. She points a finger at the people who've been invited into UK as a result of Mr. Sutherland's and his colleagues' policies. I think this amounts to hypocrisy. And if we're going to deal with what's really going wrong with the country, we've got to work out who's caused the problem and who is still causing the problem. And the other thing I think we'll bring on screen is this quote from Anne-Marie Waters. She says, "Women and girls in particular are paying a price as disgusting attitudes towards females are imported wholesale. The rape, abuse and humiliation of women at the hands of Muslim immigrants to Europe is too widespread to accurately report. Women of Britain did not spend the last century fighting for their rights, only to see them crushed now by immigrant communities." Well, this is remarkable because Anne-Marie Waters has done absolutely nothing to help Melanie Shaw, who is gay herself, and other mothers brutalised by British social services, police and prisons. And of course, it's been Theresa May herself as Home Secretary and Prime Minister who's ensured that Melanie Shaw, as a gay woman, has remained in solitary confinement for close on a year. So I think we're seeing some significant hypocrisy from Anne-Marie Waters. And I think the agenda is to take over UKIP, to get that right wing, get the hate going, because if we can get the hate going, we can get the violence going on the streets. And this is what the deep state wants, because if the violence appears, we can be sure that the mechanism to crush that violence will appear. And I've inset there the UK Column's unique report that we are just 24 hours away from an EU military dictatorship because the French forces are already in position in this country. Unbelievably dangerous, Mike. And I think that everybody should be doing everything possible to ensure that UKIP, not only the leadership of it, but UKIP, the body of the church, stays within reasonable, peaceful people in order to sort the problem out.
Now, domestic extremism, non-violent extremism, lots of pressure from the politicians and the media about these issues, and we've got to censor people because there's too much stuff on the internet which could be considered to be non-violent extremism. It might lead to terrorism and all this kind of stuff, might lead to people being killed. Well, it staggers me, David, it staggers me that a whole host of so-called celebrities, in this case it's Johnny Depp, have been effectively calling for the assassination of the President of the United States. Now, I don't care whether people like Donald Trump, like his policies or not. What is being called for here is the death of a head of state. And that seems to me to be a pretty extreme position to be taking. And yet there's no criticism of it. So this is only the latest celebrity, Johnny Depp, speaking at Glastonbury yesterday. And he said, "Can you bring Trump here?" he asked. "When was the last time an actor assassinated a president? I want to clarify, I'm not an actor. I lie for a living. It's been a while. Maybe it's about time." And he's basically saying it's about time we got Trump up against the wall and shot him. This is spectacular language and going, you know, uncriticized by the mainstream media and by politicians.
Yes, because these are secular saints. This is the cult of celebrity. And we're not allowed to think ill of these people that we are meant to emulate. Now, if Johnny Depp had been living in a council house in Luton and had said this, I suspect he would have been already cooling his heels at one of Her Majesty's rougher prisons. But there are laws that don't seem to apply to the great and the good.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just add to that that, of course, this is one of the most dangerous things that Theresa May brought in as Home Secretary. This is the mixing of the police into the community. So I've just chosen one of many reports. This is Research Report 61. It's talking about delivering neighbourhood policing in partnership. And it's the partnership which is the dangerous thing, because we have the police working behind closed doors with local authorities, mental health teams, education providers, charities, and we have no separation of powers. And this effectively is a Stasi state, but again, it's hidden under this veneer that all is still well in this country. So I regard this as particularly dangerous. Nobody knows at the moment who the police are spying on, because, of course, they could do this through the MAPRA, multi-agency public protection arrangement teams, those 63 hidden teams that can simply use hearsay to say that somebody may be a potential terrorist threat or be non-violent.
Mm. Brian, I don't know whether this incident, this Russian attack on ISIS in Syria, is perhaps related to the flyby of Sergei Shoigu's plane yesterday or not, but clearly Russia has decided that they need to show a bit of muscle today. They have fired several cruise missiles from the eastern part of the Mediterranean. The ships involved were the frigates Admiral Essen and Admiral Grigorovich, and the submarine Krasnodar, and the submarine there firing from under the water, as you can see in the picture there. So this was according to a statement from the Russian Defense Ministry. They said that they targeted an area east of Palmyra where militants, US-backed militants, had heavy weaponry and manpower, and the militants had moved there from Raqqa. They said that all targets were destroyed. Now, what was interesting about this, Brian, was that they said that they informed Turkey and Israel about the missile launches, but they didn't mention the United States at all. And it implies, they didn't say this, but it implies that they did not inform the US that this was going to happen. And as I say, these were US-backed terrorists. There may well have been US personnel on the ground at the time.
Yeah, my feeling, Mike, is this is not connected to the flyby incident. I think this will be a very well thought out attack by Russia, which will basically be saying to the Americans, well, you shot down one Syrian plane because you said it was carrying out a mission too close to US-backed forces in Syria. But we are going to continue to attack those forces, even if you Americans are close. Mm. So I think you will find that where those warheads were delivered would be on units where the Americans were in close proximity.
Mm. Okay, let's come back to Grenfell Towers then. The police made a statement this morning saying that they've now identified the source of the fire, which was a fridge freezer, they say. They also said that the cladding that was used in the tower had failed safety tests. So they say that they're now considering considering manslaughter charges. I think, David, you're wondering who those manslaughter charges would be brought against.
I've got lots of questions. I mean, that's a short statement from the police, and I've got a much longer series of questions. The first one is, they've managed to identify the fridge freezer. Have they managed to identify a number of victims?
No, they haven't. And in fact, if we bring this one up, this is the Evening Standard. This is across most of the mainstream media as well. But the headline from the Evening Standard here is Grenfell Tower, two more victims named as inquests open into the deaths. So they've started running the coroner's inquests into the individuals who have died, not into the broader incident. They're still saying that it's 79, that number is likely to increase. And they're starting to cover the details of how people have died, which isn't the most pleasant reading. But nonetheless, it is not clear who has died. It's not clear who's still alive. It's not clear where people are at this point in time. So
can I just add in there, Mike, that of course UK column, with some help from Patrick Henningsen from 21st Century Wire, have started a database to try to get to grips with this complete nonsense that nobody is allowed to know what the outcome of number of deaths, people who were saved and ones who are missing in the tower. So if people have information, we're happy to receive it, but we do need a source. So you cannot just say somebody is missing. You have to provide us with information to verify what you're saying. But we thought, if the mainstream media is not going to tell the truth about the number of survivors dead and missing, then we're going to take it upon ourselves to try and put some information together. But you need to provide evidence when you make a claim in relation to any person.
So, David, you have published this article on the Column website, Grenfell Tower and the Search for Truth. You're saying it's dedicated to all those who search for a full understanding of the tragedy of Grenfell Tower, both official and unofficial investigators. Most of all, it is for the survivors of the inferno and the friends and relatives of those who were lost. So tell us what you're covering here.
Well, to follow on from the previous point about the police investigation, one of the points we raise here, the police said the material has failed safety tests. Well, that they don't specify which safety tests. And the safety tests themselves are one of the areas that we need to investigate. The safety tests seem to have been seriously deficient. So we're using seriously deficient tests to establish facts by the police now. That's a little concerning. So we explore that area. Now, another area we look at, and this is just looking at the outer cladding. There are other layers of insulation. There's many other technical issues relating to this tragedy. But just looking at the outer cladding, we identify what the supply chain is, how the material is specified, all the checks that are meant to be in place to make sure the right material is there. And we look at what the manufacturers say and what the various agencies say and what the roles and responsibilities and all of this were. So when the police say they're considering manslaughter charges, well, against whom? Against who? Which party are they actually looking at prosecuting? And we now know there's another 11 buildings across the country with similar cladding and of a similar scale, and that number's likely to go up. So if we've got one, let's say, architect in London who specified the wrong material in a particular set of circumstances, and another, you know, 10, 20, 50 architects across the country who did exactly the same thing, are we going to prosecute them all? Or are we just going to prosecute the one who was unlucky enough to be the first person who had a fire in one of these buildings? I think there are many, many questions that the police have to answer about that statement. Now, what our article goes into is it looks at the nature of the material. It gets to the bottom of the statements made by the manufacturer. Now, they are very interesting. The manufacturer's literature, published literature, clearly states, when you find it, that the wrong grade of cladding was used. But it's very obscure. It's tucked away in a supplementary document, and it's expressed in a very strange way with very strange language, and it makes it far from clear. And I would encourage people to look at the article and see just how that was done. And then we look not only at the role of the architects and the contractors and the regulators and building control, but also at industry bodies who certify this material. And we look at the certificates relating to this cladding material. And I think the conclusions and what we find there will shock many people as to what the relevant certificates were saying about this material, which was basically that it was fine, that it didn't mention the restrictions on height. It didn't mention the flammability. In fact, it said that it was barely flammable at all. So that's what's in the official documentation. So when we're looking at reasons, there are many reasons, and we need to look at them all.
David, can I just add in there that I still have great interest in reaction from the public sector, from the local authorities, because whatever the procurement was, whatever mistakes were made in the provision of that cladding, the wrong cladding selected, the wrong cladding applied, the wrong cladding signed off, that was part of the contractual issues. But we then had ordinary members of the public using their intelligence and common sense, warning the local authorities there was a risk, and they were crushed with a brutal arrogance. Go away, we're not interested in what you have to say. And to me, these people, aside from anybody else in the private sector, people within the local authority system, people who wrote the letters or were instructed to write the letters back to those local people telling them that their concerns were not worth bothering about, those people need to be properly brought to account. And in my experience of these inquiries, these are the very people that the state tries to protect so that we can repeat the same mistakes in the future, and on it goes. I don't know whether you think...
That, I was just going to say that intimidation and that dismissal of concerns from members of the public by people in so-called authority continues today, with the owner of the residence group blog receiving a letter from the legal team from the council, basically saying, we don't like what you've written about us. If you've got specific allegations to make, take them to the police, but in any case, take it down. And threatening legal letters. So they still want to silence the local community.
Of course, because they're in deep trouble now because they're highly exposed. Can we also ask, David, can we just also ask our UK column viewers and listeners to have a look at your excellent article on the UK column website? And we're going to say, please, will you help us push this analysis out? The mainstream media not doing their job. David Scott has done a huge amount of work to put this information together to start people thinking about what's really going on. Can you push the information around, direct people to the link, or provide people with a link to that article, and to get as many people as possible reading what the mainstream media simply won't print at the moment?
David.
Yes, and it is a start. This article's a start. It points, I hope, the way. But there'll be huge amounts of information to be discovered. So if you do discover it, please let us know, and let's keep this investigation and this discussion going, and make sure that these things are not ignored.
Okay, David, thank you for that. And I just was able, before we came on live, to insert this, thanks to one of our viewers who pushed it through to me. This is part of a document about sprinklers. This is London Fire and Emergency Planning Authority. It's going back, I think, to 2013, July 2013. A very sensible document. It was making some very good recommendations, agreeing the production of an authority sprinklers toolkit to provide guidance and best practice advice to officers on the installation of sprinklers. And of course, we should remember that sprinkler systems, this is fire suppression. A fire has started, but the water coming out of those sprinklers takes the heat away, pushes down the fire. Very, very important stuff. And they authorised an allocation of £100,000, so not a small sum, from the fire prevention grant to support a competition designed to incentivise local authorities to install sprinklers. So this was very, very good policy coming on about sprinklers. And if you get into the depth of it, it gets very interesting, because here's the fire minister, Brendan Lewis MP. We've mentioned this man with his policing minister hat on, but here he was when he was told that sprinklers should also be installed in new built homes. He said, well, the government won't be following that advice. So there is the arrogance, the put down. He doesn't have the expertise himself, but he's the man saying, no, we're not going to have the sprinklers. And in this document, they particularly say the reference to high rise flats sets out the benefits of a sprinkler system to occupiers and firefighters alike, due to the potential for control of fire growth by fire suppression. Would you agree with those recommendations, David, there?
The single biggest improvement, technical improvement, that we have to make to fire safety is fire suppression systems. The difference in the damage and the death toll in buildings with and without fire suppression sprinkler systems is dramatic. It's absolutely stark. So, yeah, we're going to have to look at these things again. What the minister made this comment that we're not doing that. Well, what was driving that comment? Because it doesn't say. Presumably cash, presumably some sort of cost-benefit analysis. Well, that analysis must have changed now. So these things need to be looked at afresh. The statement you made earlier, Brian, when the book is written about the nature of the state in early 21st century Britain, and there will be a book written one day to describe it, I think Brutal Arrogance should be the title.
Okay, Maybe you should write it, David. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
we're going to end on this one, I think. David, this is a pretty bizarre tweet. Those bizarre office cabinet clear-outs. We've got a cat in a filing cabinet and some batteries and a barrister's wig.
Yeah, this is from the always excellent Scottish Law Reporter, right, which is a specialist legal blog in Scotland, who are normally very, you know, this is a legal blog. It's normally very serious. And they don't normally do cryptic clues, but here they have. So I thought it was maybe something we should suggest that people have a wee look at and see if they can figure out, because we have here hashtag Levy McRae, hashtag suspended, hashtag Kaluna Vulgaris. Do you know what Kaluna Vulgaris is?
Tell us.
That's the Latin name for Heather.
Okay.
So that would be a clue. This relates to some form of office clear out and what was found in it. Now, what I'm hearing is the whole legal community in Scotland knows exactly what this was about, but no one can say because of who it involves.
I've actually heard that the Scottish legal system is buzzing, literally buzzing, with the revelation of the cat out of the bag here.
This is what I'm hearing as well, yes. So if anybody knows, perhaps they could let us know if they have any information on this. But it is very cryptic and very interesting indeed.
Do we get any clues from the hashtags, particularly of the one sort of organisation named?
Well, Levy McRae are a well-known firm at the very heart of Scottish, not only legal life, but political life. That would be a starting point for people wanting to investigate.
Do you think some people are going to be making capital out of this?
That's distinctly possible.
Yeah.
And there's also, although we're maybe taking a slightly light-hearted approach here, what I'm hearing in the background, there are serious concerns about all of this and what was actually found that do concern me, considering some of the power wielded by people at the very top of the Scottish legal establishment, people who boast that they can influence governments, can influence policy, you know, with people with that degree of power, well, I would question whether anyone should have that degree of power. But okay. If anyone does, you certainly want them to be someone without secrets in their filing cabinets.
Yeah, indeed.
Indeed. Well, I believe that the matter is quite serious. So I just thought I'd put together this slide. I think it is a cabinet office issue. Pretty unpleasant. I think that eventually the issue of the cat coming out of the bag from the open drawer cabinet will become a cabinet office matter. In fact, perhaps it's already there.
Yeah, it could well be.
Okay. Well, if anybody has been following that very cryptic report...
Somebody has been following it in the chat box, at least.
OK, we'll be very interested in what you have to say, but there are some clues in that tweet. Have a look at the tweet and see what you think. Of course, Heather is always a good place to start, and people will no doubt make capital of that. So, David, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you for the excellent analysis on Grenfell Tower. We're going to stay reporting over that in the days and weeks to come, because it is outrageous that people have suffered in that way. And I think it's really coming up to the general public now to take the government and the local authorities to task over the way they think they've become future leaders. That's it from us. We'll be back at the same time on Monday. Have a good weekend. Please circulate that excellent report from David on the Grenfell Tower fire. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Bye.